Today it is International Working Women's Day, a day that was originally set up by Clara Zetkin, or proposed by her, in 1910-1911, which was a day that was supposed to encourage militancy in action and mobilise women against capitalism. Traditionally, women have played a very prominent role in revolutionary action, and actually, if we look at the Russian Revolution, which is what I'm going to focus on today, women were the movement, were the group that moved to the streets in 1917, around about the time of International Working Women's Day in Petrograd, and sparked off what was the Russian Revolution. And they took to the street in large numbers, led by striking textile workers, demanding bread and an end to war and for peace. And they called on the men, the working men, to support them. And obviously, as we know, this is one of the events that sparked the Russian Revolution at that time. Women clearly in this place played a very agitational and progressive role. It was their role of that group of women that sparked everything off. And so it was an incredibly important position and an incredibly important step. And it was women that took that role, and it's women that should be taking that military action, militancy action today. And under the USSR, there were incredible gains made for women. So we're looking at a very backward, underdeveloped society, and yet they immediately secured rights for women, including things like the right to divorce, the right for abortion, the right to paid maternity leave and equal pay. And before this, under the czarist conditions, men were actually encouraged to beat their wives, women were seen as the legal property of men, and in some rural areas, they were prevented from learning, from reading and from writing, and forced to wear veils against their will. And of course, we all know that the USSR gave women the right to vote, very importantly. And these reforms, I think it's important and necessary to understand, were won by the militancy of those women taking to the streets and demanding an end to the conditions that they were living in. And it's also interesting to note that despite these reforms that were won, Lenin was still advocating for further liberation, explaining that these were just a few steps that had been taken to alleviate the material burden on women. But actually, there was a lot further to go before we had proper liberation of women and equality between men and women. And a lot of what he wanted to was advocating for, and a lot of the steps that needed to be taken and still need to be taken today, were removing the material burdens that affect women singularly. So the things that capitalism puts on women, for example, being in charge of childcare, having to take a large burden of the housework, which is still one of the problems that women face today, that takes up a lot of their time and that in effect puts a double burden on working women who have to work and then go home and do all these tasks as well. And obviously, I think what's important is that it was the Soviet Union that provided these things. Free school meals and clothing allowances for children removed some of that burden of working women having to provide food and things at home as well. But that needed to go further. It needed to provide fully communal feeding, canteens, that type of thing where food could be produced. It needed to communalise laundries so that housework didn't need to fall on an individual. And of course, education and childcare also had to be fully communalised, so that it was a society taking care of all these things rather than a single woman. And obviously, another really key gain of the USSR was that life expectancy through these reforms rose from sort of 30 years for women to 74 years, which is a huge, huge increase. But sadly, all of this was clawed back when the USSR collapsed. And this poses the question of how these reforms and how this liberation, to an extent, was achieved. How was that achieved under the USSR, and what happened to make that be taken away and clawed immediately back as capitalism became the prominent mode of production in Russia again? And I think the answer to that is on two levels. The first level is that it was the militancy and the action of the women in the revolution. This didn't happen because people sat at home and thought about good ideas. This happened because women took to the streets, marched and demanded and called upon people to join them. The second side to that, I think, which is something more of equal importance, was that all of these reforms were only achieved because there was a planned economy put in place in the USSR. So production was planned, things could be produced as they were needed, and resources could be equally distributed to places where they were needed, which obviously allowed for a reduction in working hours or the ability to feed people on a mass scale rather than people making food for themselves at home and suffering. And it's interesting to note that after the collapse of the USSR, production plummeted by 60%. And so without this material basis that you can provide for people equally and liberate people from individual roles, it's not possible to achieve any long-lasting reforms, any reforms that are gained, that may be successful and that may be progressive and it may be a good thing for people, can only be temporary because, as we've seen at the minute, when as soon as you have a crisis of capitalism, a lot of these reforms are clawed back. So sure start schemes, for example, that were set up under Labour have now been clawed back. Women have been very heavily affected by cuts to benefits, and people are having to work more and more hours and multiple jobs just to provide. And it is women that have been very heavily affected by this. And so we have to think that if reforms are only temporary under capitalism, capitalism cannot provide a liberating society for women to live in. It can only happen if we nationalise major parts of our economy and plan the economy that we have and under democratic workers' control so that we can really seriously start providing the things that people need and liberating them from this double burden of work and housework and childcare and all of these other things. And if you look at the reforms and if you look at the success that the Russian Revolution had on liberating women, and then you look at the conditions that happened under, it's clear that now, with the developed societies that we live in, with the increased development of the means of production and the changed technological advances that we had, we could provide so much more for people if only we took the means of production into the hands of the workers and used it to benefit people as opposed to a few people, used it to benefit everybody. Women have always historically taken key roles in revolutionary movements. You only need to look recently at the role women played in the miners' strike in the UK, which celebrated 30 years of the ending only last week, and where women were not only sort of supporting men in the strike, not only setting up soup kitchens, but taking to the picket lines and encouraging that militant attitude. Again, the role that women played in the Egyptian revolution, it couldn't have taken place without them. And so when we're talking about the women's struggle, what we're really talking about is the worker struggle. These two things are inherently hand in hand. They cannot be separated. And I think that it's important that, you know, with it being International Working Women's Day, we're talking about its revolutionary origins. We're talking about the revolutionary and incredibly important militant role that women play. And we're you know, joining these two struggles together and talking about ending women's oppression simultaneously with ending the oppression that workers faces. Women, we have nothing to lose but our chains, but we have a socialist revolution to fight for that we have historically played a very important role in and that we will do again in the future.